This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. President Bush and the First Lady last night joined thousands of Republicans in celebrating the start of his second term. They made a whirlwind tour of the many inaugural balls after taking part in the traditional parade that lasted all afternoon. Mr. Bush was sworn into office just before noon yesterday, and in his inaugural address, he committed the United States to defeating tyranny and expanding freedom around the world. It was a day full of tradition, NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne reports.
Inauguration Day. Sure, it's a big moment for the president, but it's also pretty exciting if you're in a high school band marching in perfect row after perfect row down Pennsylvania Avenue toward the White House in the nation's capital.
This group is proud to be an American.
It's all part of the scene, not just marching bands. There were scores of those, but also clowns pushing shopping carts and a handbell chorus. And a dance troupe decked out in pastel-colored hoop dresses that would make Scarlett O'Hara proud. Oh, and bagpipers from New York City. And on it goes, all streaming past the massive glass-enclosed viewing stand built right in front of the White House, where the president, his family, and other dignitaries take in the show. The president himself reached the reviewing stand after walking the last block and a half with his wife, Laura, both waving to the crowd. They had been driven the rest of the way from the Capitol in the presidential limousine, accompanied by a flotilla of security vehicles and motorcycle officers. Of course, the main event of the day took place several hours earlier at the Capitol building.
I, George Walker Bush,
do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
Sworn in by an ailing Chief Justice, William Rehnquist, the president delivered a 22-minute address that outlined in often poetic terms his view of America's role in the world. He recalled the terrorist attacks of 9/11, calling it a day of fire. Citing ideologies that feed hatred and excuse murder, the president said the reign of hatred can be beaten by the spread of freedom.
The survival of liberty in our land increasingly depends on the success of liberty in other lands. The best hope for peace in our world is the expansion of freedom in all the world.
The themes the president struck were consistent with those he had pursued in the years since 9/11. Notably, though, he did not utter the word Iraq, though he did speak of obligations difficult to fulfill and dishonorable to abandon. He said it is U.S. policy to support the growth of democratic movements in every nation and that America will defend itself by force when necessary. He spoke of the patience Americans have granted him in the hard task of securing freedom for America, and he promised more efforts to promote freedom in other lands.
We will persistently clarify the choice before every ruler in every nation, the moral choice between oppression, which is always wrong, and freedom, which is eternally right.
The president also said there's work to be done here in the U.S. He called on the country to abandon all habits of racism, saying bigotry at home contradicts a message of freedom. And he offered this challenge to Americans, echoing the words of President John F. Kennedy 44 years ago.
Make the choice to serve in a cause larger than your wants, larger than yourself. And in your days, you will add not just to the wealth of our country, but to its character.
This was also a speech with strong religious overtones. Near the beginning of his address, Mr. Bush had this to say.
From the day of our founding, we have proclaimed that every man and woman on this earth has rights and dignity and matchless value because they bear the image of the Maker of heaven and earth.
And later on, he returned to the subject, assigning a central role in the life of the nation to morality, character, and scripture.
In America's ideal of freedom, the public interest depends on private character, on integrity, and tolerance toward others, and the rule of conscience in our own lives. Self-government relies, in the end, on the governing of the self. That edifice of character is built in families, supported by communities with standards, and sustained in our national life by the truths of Sinai, the Sermon on the Mount, the words of the Quran, and the varied faiths of our people.
Those seated on the platform for Mr. Bush's address included three of his predecessors in the White House. His father, George H.W. Bush, was there, as were Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton. Clinton, inside the Capitol building just prior to the speech, offered some thoughts on what Mr. Bush may be feeling on this day that he takes the oath after being reelected.
It's very different the second time, but immensely rewarding. You're more comfortable and more hopeful.
But that hopefulness can also disappear, according to former Republican Senator Alan Simpson, who was also on the dais yesterday. He says the president has laid out an ambitious set of goals for his second term, including reforming Social Security, rewriting the federal tax code, and limiting lawsuits and damage awards in medical malpractice cases. But Simpson says getting this enacted will be tough.
It's going to be a rugged time, because what will happen is Republicans in the majority will begin to balk at certain things. And that doesn't mean that they're going to turn on the president, but they'll get balky because they'll know that he's not coming back, and they'd like to. So there'll be some conflict there, which is eternal.
The president yesterday did talk about the divisions in the country after a hard-fought election season and said he would work to heal them in order to move the country forward. Those were words welcomed by Democratic Senator Harry Reid of Nevada, the new Senate minority leader. But in remarks on the Senate floor following the inauguration, Reid was also a bit skeptical.
With the spirit of the inauguration close to our hearts today, I look forward to the great debates ahead in the great debating society we call the United States Senate. I'm optimistic, Mr. President, and I'm confident that today could be a new beginning, but it will only be a new beginning if the tone that's set today is carried forward in the years to come.
And throughout the day yesterday, there were protesters along the parade route and even one in the ticketed seating area at the Capitol. People clearly opposed to President Bush's view of the world and his policies. Still, for the president, it was a day not to worry about protests or approval ratings or the Democratic opposition or even Republicans who may not be ready to endorse his second-term agenda. Such things could be set aside for one day and one evening. Mr. Bush and his wife managed to pay quick visits to 10 inaugural balls around Washington. But they still got back to the White House by just after 10 p.m., nearly an hour and a half ahead of schedule, in advance of today's first full day of the president's second term. Don Gagne, NPR News, Washington.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and Mrs. Laura Bush.
To hear the president's second inaugural address or to read the text of his speech, visit npr.org.